Welcome back to Living Our Breast Lives, episode 11, a podcast not only about two women thriving with metastatic breast cancer, but also self-love, appreciation, and overall awakening to this beautiful gift we call life. Each episode, we will be focusing on a different word that will highlight the overall theme of each episode. Please don't forget to not only tune in, but to also subscribe and review.
Welcome back, and thank you for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. My name is Brittany, and with me is Bren.
It feels so good to be back. Thanks for tuning in to episode 11. I think after a very long two-month break, it is time to have a conversation about what's been going on with our girl, Brittany. So let's talk about what's been going on, Britt.
Where does one begin? There's the short version. There's the long version.
I think our listeners want the nitty gritty long version. So let's do it.
All right. The nitty gritty long version starts back in April of 2021. And while I'm not going to give, you know, almost 10 months of detail, what I will say is that back in April, there was a small lesion on my spine in L1, and it was found on a bone scan. And essentially, because of its size, it was one of those things that we were just going to watch. Well, then, you know, 3 months later, I had a PET scan, and it was showing increased, what they call, I guess, metabolic activity. So they decided that, gosh, I'm killing my brain here trying to think back on it. Oh, they wanted, this is how long it's been, okay? They wanted to send me to radiation oncology because the thought was, since I was responding so well everywhere else, that they would just radiate the small spot on my spine. And then we would continue on with the current treatment. While in the middle of, you know, getting mapped out to have radiation done, I had another MRI done, and the MRI was almost saying, hey, we don't think this is a metastatic tumor. We think this could be a hemangioma. And I don't think hemangioma is a word we've used before. So essentially it's a tumor that is made up of a bunch of different blood vessels. So I just call it a blood tumor. So with that being said, it was kind of like we had thought that I was Ned, which was incredible and amazing. And then I was on that little fun ride, only for it to be short-lived, because then when I had further imaging done, it looked like the spot on my spine was metastatic, because they called it there was a lytic disease, which was basically something that was eating away at the bone of my spine. So this became the, and I mean, it's been back and forth for 10 months, honestly, as far as, is it a cancerous tumor or is it not? Because on the MRI, you can tell that it, you know, is more of a hemangioma, but then okay, on the PET scans, it's showing increased uptake, so it looks metastatic. Right. So I've been on this roller coaster of just, can we just biopsy the thing and get it over with, which isn't preferred to do. So I got, I decided to get a second opinion and go to Dana-Farber, and essentially their radiologist kind of like thought the same thing. It was a, they said that it's hard because on the MRI, it looks like a hemangioma, but you can definitely tell that it's lytic and again, like eating away at the bone. And typically hemangiomas aren't lytic in nature, but metastasis is. So
oh my God.
Like, okay, cool. So it's like, can we biopsy it? And Dana-Farber, as incredible as they are, they were the first people to say, you don't want to biopsy a hemangioma because of the bleeding risk involved.
So then what are you to do?
Keep scanning and watching and increasing how often I have the scan. So basically going from 4 months to 2 months, and then, you know, following up with radiation oncology, so they're in the loop what's going on. It's very,
so you have a lot of eyes on deck. right now. You have a lot of hands on deck. You have a lot of eyes watching you, which is a really good thing.
Yes, it's incredible. Other than I'm kind of like a black and white person.
Yeah.
So I want a very definitive answer instead of a, I don't know. And, you know, the best thing ever is that John Hopkins and Dana-Farber are who I go to. And I mean, they are top in the country. So I feel very blessed to be able to have them, and they seem to be on the same page. And kind of the reason that they're so focused on this spot on my spine is because, I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms, clinical trials and whatnot. I'm still on my first line of treatment, and there's only so many treatments available. So you want to be able to stay on your first line of treatment as long as possible. The reason they're watching the spine so much is that if it's not metastatic, then we can just, or I'm sorry, I should say a metastasis, we can continue on the current treatment plan I'm on.
Right, if and it, not move to second line.
Right, because that's kind of where you would go if you're, you know, having new spots spring up. But there's this really, really promising, throw this onto there. There's this very promising clinical trial that should be finishing up in the fall or winter of this year. And essentially, my oncologist is trying to buy me time to get to that clinical trial because it's in phase 3. So it's about to finish up. So I can't join the clinical trial. All the drugs that are in the clinical trial are already FDA approved, but they're not approved in that combination. So what that means essentially is I can't join the clinical trial and have the, you know, medication covered, but I can't go on this medicinal combination on my own because it's not approved. So insurance won't cover it. So my oncologist trying to milk as much as she can out of my current treatment, her thought is, you know, we zap the area on my spine, hope nothing else pops up. And that way it's kind of just like taking care of things that spring up as they come to give me more time on this current treatment and then wait until something more, you know, promising becomes available. So I completely understand the reasoning behind everything that we're doing.
Right.
It's just getting to the point of I live for appointments and it's, every time you have another appointment, you're subjecting yourself to somebody else's opinion and thoughts.
There are a lot of opinions out there.
Yeah.
And it can become very overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just exhausted.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's almost like, I mean, treatment in itself depletes you, but then not being able to escape the treatment is really hard because of all the appointments. And it was like, I was just getting settled into like my nice routine. I was being more looking towards, instead of saying, you know, I don't want to think about the future. I was finally starting to think about the future past, you know, the next few months and really starting to almost feel like have a routine again, or like.
You get that kind of news. You kind of have a shift in your mindset. There's this realization of like, maybe my life isn't only short term. Like maybe I have a long shot at this right now.
Yeah, that, and I think anytime things are just like, when you put it in a perspective of like, and I hate statistics, but thinking the average is still 3 years with metastatic disease and I'm at 2.5 years, it's like, you know, woo, I'm trucking along. And then the minute something changes, it's kind of like, wait, I've only like 2.5 years flew by. Like, where did that time go? Like that, like, this is not enough. Like, I want more.
And it's not fair that there's even a timestamp. It's not fair.
No.
Nothing about it is fair.
And it trickles like ignorance is bliss, you know, in a way where like it trickles such like a domino effect, because it's not just that, it's then like the, what it does to your psyche. So like all of a sudden you have to like balance, which you've already struggled with, but you've kind of come to terms what your balance is in life. But then like all of a sudden it's that reminder that like time is fleeting and oh my gosh, like I need to be doing more with my life, but then trying to balance, you know, because I haven't won the lottery yet and I don't know that I'm lucky enough to, but like, you can't just go crazy and, mm-hmm. you know, spend money left on right thinking like, YOLO, I could die tomorrow. I mean, mm-hmm. well, any of us could, but like also trying to be realistic that, okay, new treatments are constantly coming out. Like you could have several years. Let's not get crazy with it, but it almost creates this, like, I call it manic panic in you, that like you just want to like live life to the fullest and just feel everything possible because you're getting awoken again or getting shaken. Like,
we both had such good news, and so we stopped looking at short term. And I know that's kind of really calmed me down these last couple of months, because I was right there with you, you know, just wanting to do everything and anything. Traveling the world, seeing places you've never seen, going to all of these places and doing all of these things you've never done because you feel like your life is going to be shortened. One of my past oncologist appointments, my oncologist told me that if I wanted to take a break from treatment, that she would feel comfortable with it. And I don't know, for her to say that, I had this mindset shift where if my oncologist feels comfortable enough with me taking a break because I'm doing so well, when she said that to me, you know, I think statistics are, you know, after a certain amount of time on an immunotherapy, you know, you do take a break, especially as like a young cancer patient as myself who has been NED for 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a blessing in disguise right there. But
I think it's tough though, because I think when your foot's been on the gas for so long and then someone's telling you like, maybe we can step on the brake for a moment. It's like, no,
you're like, where do I go from here? Like, what? This has been my life for so long. And now,
and I think that's something too, though, with you and I, we all take turns in what situation we're in. But I think, you know, for me, there was times that I didn't really want to reach out because it's hard sometimes when I think about not necessarily you being NED, but then like other people being NED and mm-hmm. so quickly being NED, like, oh, they just started their treatment and their first scan, they're NED. It's like, what? But then like, there's the flip side to it too, where, you know, I don't think you and I've really talked about where the thing of your concern because of how close we are, that like, if you know, like you're reaching out because you want to be supportive, but then the fear that you probably have when I'm kind of shutting down because of what mental state I'm in, but right. then your mental state of like, you know, I'm your closest friend in this metastatic journey. And then like, if something happens to me, what does that mean for you? I mean,
I
have talked mm-hmm. like how you're my only metastatic friend that I've spoken to, you know, who's left, who I started this journey with. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I know we've all lost people, women and men, to this disease that we've known, but like what it does to your psyche yes. when you think someone's not good. Like when, I just know, like when you've called me and been like, it could all be in my head, but I feel like there's something in my armpit, or I feel like there's something on my breast. Like I'm mm-hmm. worried about recurrence. Like I know I start to panic because I'm yep. like, wait, what's going to happen world without Ren? But it's so tough because you have to be like, for me, it was hard because I was shutting down. I just needed to be by myself or with my own thoughts, but you're reaching out and you're trying to help, but then like trying to at least give you enough to be like, listen, I'm going to be okay. It's fine. Just so for your mental health, like to know like, okay, she's okay. Like, you know, but not knowing at the same time, like, am I giving enough that I'm calming her worries down? Because you know what I'm trying to say? Like, you don't want to be in the dark.
No, and I'm getting emotional about it because, oh God, it takes a really strong person to be going through what you were going through and to be thinking about my feelings.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, MBC is so, it's just so unpredictable. It's like 1 minute things can be going so great. And then the next minute it can just change all within a blink of an eye. And like the fact that you just said the words, you know, everyone that I guess that you started with on the journey, you know, that I'm the only one that's
That's left. That was hard.
I think that's really hard too when you put it in a perspective that it's been 2.5 years. I mean, that's it.
I know. And I mean, listen, I've had very similar feelings. It's just so tough from both perspectives, because from mine, I was so upset and shocked, you know, at the thought of you possibly having to go to your second line, because those in, you know, the metastatic world, like, we know what that means. Like, the second line is, it's a scary thought. It's doable. It's manageable in a lot of cases, but it's always scary. And so I was in my own state of shock, like, seeing you as my MBC sister, like, going through this pain. And I wanted to be supportive, and I let you have your space, and, you know, I texted you every single day. Like, even if you didn't respond, like, I just wanted you to know that I was there. But as you said before, it was also this brutal reminder that, like, it can happen to me at any moment, because it just is that unpredictable. And then from your perspective, like, this hurt me so much. Like, I know, because you love me, you're so happy for my continued success. But then I know, because you're only human, that you sit there and you think to yourself, why can't I also have that success? Why am I having to go to these second opinion doctors? Why am I having to get all of these scans and these biopsies? Like, why can't I have the 2-year run like Ren has? And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, a sisterhood in this MBC world, like, we have to be there through the good and the bad, the beautiful and the fucking ugly. And there's a lot of heaviness to it, but at the end of the day, I get through it, because I know, like, you're there on the other end. So
yeah, it's tough too, because, like, yeah, I mean, we all would like to be Ned or have those things, or, you know, think like, I'm trying everything I can to take care of myself and be healthier. Mm-hmm. And then someone else isn't. Why are they having better luck? And I mean, I think that's where it just goes back to my faith, where, like, I believe I have a purpose and God knows the purpose, and I truly believe God's working through me. And I can't say that enough. And then, you know, I think it's always important to find hope. And Dana-Farber did a metastatic, I guess it was a webinar, back in October or November. And one of the things was, it was going through all the different subtypes and all the treatments on the horizon. And my subtype was the last one. And, like, the first two things, I was like, not a candidate, just because I didn't have certain, you know, gene mutations. So then I was like, oh, great, cool. Everything on the horizon isn't even something for me. But then there was, like, four other things that I hadn't really heard of before. Sometimes I research for hope, different trial or, like, clinical trials. But when she had said, after she went through the things briefly, she said, when I say these things are, you know, coming down the line, she's like, I'm not talking about 5-10 years from now. I'm talking, like, we could have these treatments as soon as next year.
It's and amazing.
And I kept listening to that one slide over and over again, because I'm like, okay, you got this. Because I think the thing, when you had talked about, like, second line of treatment, that a lot of people don't understand, is that when I looked at a piece of paper, I mean, there's only a few lines written of things. And it's not, and the thing that's terrifying about it is you don't know how you're going to react to each combination. So even though there might be 5 things listed, well, it might be 4. Like, my first treatment wasn't Ibrance. It was Kisqali. And 2 weeks in, it was like full body rash. I mean, anytime I took the medicine, I was super sick. So it was like, my fear was, oh crap, like, okay, Kisqali doesn't work. I can go to Ibrance. They're the same, you know, family of CDK4/6 inhibitors. But I'm like, if Ibrance doesn't work, I mean, there's all these different hopes, but you just never know. So yeah, it's terrifying. Like, wait, how am I already past treatment 1? How could I be on treatment 2? And
I know.
Let me say, we're still in the middle of all this fiasco, so I hope I stay on treatment 1 a lot longer. But, you know, with that, my oncologist said, you know, you're at 24, 26 months in. That's when these treatments start to fail. And, like, to hear fail, it's like, I mean, there's just no words. It's like everything just sinks to the floor. And
Well, I am manifesting, and I'm sure all of our listeners are also manifesting, a longer time on this first line of treatment. And I had chills when you were telling us a little bit about that clinical trial that Dana-Farber had mentioned that is coming into fruition in a few months. Because, I mean, I was there. I was diagnosed metastatic, and 6 months prior to that, my immunotherapy had come on the market for metastatic breast cancer. Normally it was treated in just lung cancer. And so I just always think to myself, like, had my immunotherapy come out like 6 months later, I would have been on a different treatment. And who's to say that that treatment would have worked?
And that's the thing too. Like, you are so fortunate that, I mean, in general with the immunotherapy and having that PD-L1.
Yes.
That made it work. But I think that's a huge misconception too, is that immunotherapy, I've seen some commercials for it, and they're even talking about it with lung cancer. And I think this goes back to kind of education, that a lot of people just call it lung cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer. They don't understand that there's so many different types.
Yes.
So when that immunotherapy comes out, if you click on, because I did my own research, it treats like multiple types of cancer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you have to have the very specific lung cancer that it treats and the very specific breast cancer that it treats.
Like, exactly. And that's where that PD-L1 positive, you know, where that came through. Had I not been PD-L1 positive, I wouldn't be sitting here on this immunotherapy right now.
Right. So like, people don't understand. It's like, okay, yes, Ren has breast cancer. Oh, but what type of breast cancer?
Exactly.
Triple negative. Okay. So triple negative. Now we have to see if she has that PD-L1, because if she doesn't, this is a no go. So, I mean, bravo to the researchers, because I mean, how much do you have to pick apart to find a treatment? But that's really where it's like, one shoe doesn't fit all. You know, it's important to mention too, if any of our listeners are interested or if they've ever done it, like, a huge thank you to you, because without clinical trials and participants, we wouldn't be where we are right now. And that was one of the things, you know, when I went to Dana-Farber, I was kind of like, I'm so fortunate for those who participated in the clinical trials that got me on the medication I'm on now.
Yes.
Anything I can do to help, like, I want to do that. We wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for that. And that's why I know for me, if a clinical trial presents itself, I want to be able to help as many people as I can, just because I'm so thankful for what everyone else has done. And if me participating in a trial can help someone mm-hmm. later on save their life, then, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to do that. Because the doctors and researchers.
Forward.
Yeah, the doctors and researchers can only do so much until they have the participants available.
So, Britt, just to kind of shift gears here, I wanted to bring up, I don't know, your thoughts and opinions behind keeping close contact with the MBC community. You know, just hearing about what you've been going through these past like 2 months, it's gut-wrenching. It is, just because I love you and you're my friend, but also, I don't know how else to say this, but I kind of protect myself in a way of, I don't really communicate much with people in the MBC community. Originally, that's why I wanted to do this podcast. And I don't know if we've ever spoken about this before, but I remember talking to Danny and I remember being like, I can't form these relationships. Like, it's too hard. You know, we know that there are 114 lives each day in the United States that is taken from metastatic breast cancer. And it's like, I think that's 40,000 women and like 600 men in 1 year. And, you know, the more relationships that you make in the MBC community, the higher the risk that you will lose that person. And it just gets harder and harder. The loss is too hard. The wrapping my brain around the fact that 114 people can die each day from this disease, it's nearly impossible for me to just accept. I just become enraged.
I try to evaluate certain things as they arise. With that, yes, like the few friends I've had, you know, you see the loss and that is difficult, but I wouldn't say I don't reach out for friendships in those communities because I'm worried about the loss. It's more, you're bringing me down. I mean, medicine, you know, NBC can already bring you down. We need to lift each other up. And mm-hmm. if I see there's too much bringing down, then to protect myself, I'm going to remove myself. from that type of situation. And that's kind of what I've done, and it's made me feel better.
So the reason why I completely shut myself out to the community was because I was part of a Facebook group for metastatic disease, and I had just gotten married, and I had posted up, it was a picture of Danny and I had my wedding headscarf that the nonprofit here in Charlotte, the Pink House, had made for me. And she reached out and she said, oh my goodness, like, you know, I'm 6 months away from getting married and I'm bald, and your headscarf is just beautiful. Like, can you tell me where you got it? I want, you know, to have one just like it. And I ended up sending it to her. And I said, there's no need for you to go and spend any money. Like, I'm going to send this to you in the mail because you deserve to look and feel as beautiful as I did on my wedding day.
Aww.
Yeah. And so I reached out to her, and her response to me was, you know, that there was progression on her scans, and so they had to push back the wedding, and she's so grateful because it's beautiful and she got it. And about like 2 months later, I looked at her her Facebook profile, and it was a memorial page, and so she had passed on. And so, like, I just was pretty scarred by that because I, you know, I have a lot of feelings behind it, and like, I don't have to get into it right now, but like, she obviously didn't get to wear the wedding headscarf.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't even have a friendship with her. I didn't have a relationship. You know, I just tried to do the right thing. And, you know, the fact that she didn't make it, I was pretty traumatized by it for a little while. And quite frankly, I still am. You know, I almost feel like the less women with MBC that I know and I am friends with, the less, you know, hurt I will be. And that's just how I am. Like, if I'm feeling upset, I close off to the world and I distance myself. And I've always been that way. Maybe eventually I will outgrow that. It's crazy that we're even talking about this because just a few weeks ago, you brought up Nightbird from America's Got Talent. And I, you know, for anybody who doesn't know Nightbird, she is a young girl, just like Brittany and I with NBC. And she decided to take the risk and sing amongst millions of people on America's Got Talent, and her stage name was Nightbird, and she passed away not too long ago after her cancer progressed.
I love Nightbird. I love her positive energy. Her voice is incredible.
She wrote her own music.
Yeah.
And the lyrics were amazing.
Yes. I mean, I've listened to her quite frequently.
But she's like us. She's yes. Just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And that, God.
I think the only thing that I wish would have been different, and everyone has their own levels of what they want to share, is that I wish she would have said that she had metastatic breast cancer, because she did have breast cancer, and then from what I understand, it came back as metastatic. If I'm wrong, I do apologize. But she did have metastatic breast cancer, and with how much, you know, how, I don't like using the word popular, but like
the public eye. She was in the public eye. Yeah,
she was in the public eye because she was such a ray of sunshine and so mm-hmm. positive about everything. I mean, everyone knows Nightbird when you say it.
And not everybody goes on a like singing national television that has a cancer diagnosis.
Right. Yeah. And especially cancer in her lungs. And she sounded beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Yes.
I wish she would have used that platform she was given to specify metastatic breast cancer, just because.
To bring awareness to it.
Right. I mean, I don't even know. You know, what was it, like Shannon Doherty, that was one who said, I have metastatic breast cancer, who actually said it. But then I wonder about all the, you know, different hot, like Hollywood celebrities that we've lost too.
Mm-hmm.
Are they just saying breast cancer? Or are they saying like metastatic breast cancer?
Yeah. And because as we've spoken about on previous episodes, there is a tremendous difference, and metastatic disease does not get enough attention. It just doesn't. Right. There's not enough awareness to it. And I agree. I do wish that maybe she would have used her platform to say metastatic breast cancer, just so that there would have been so many people to research maybe and say, like, what is metastatic breast cancer, or how can I help?
Yeah, because not saying with her specifically, but you never know who would maybe think like, oh, she has cancer. She has it, you know, in her lungs, in her liver, in her, you know, wherever else. They could think, oh, wow, she has a lot of cancer, instead of understanding that she has a lot of cancer, but it's all breast cancer, because right. it all originated from the same spot.
And metastasized to other organs, yes.
Yeah, like, great I know point. When I was younger, my uncle, he had cancer, and it was like, okay, it was in his lungs, liver, and lymph node. And I just knew, I'm like, oh gosh, he has cancer in three different spots. And then it traveled to his brain. But I never understood that the primary location was the lungs.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
and not many people do. This disease doesn't need sympathy, right? Like, we need action. We need outrage. We need things to change. We need, you know, donations to help with research. We need more. Like, stage four needs more.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where your anger towards everything, you know what I mean, comes from. You go from like sad to mad.
Yes. And it's not, that's not for everybody, you know, but it's those that are, that have the same disease as Nightbird.
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, Ren, I feel like we've completely covered a lot. I think today's episode is very raw, dare I say therapeutic too, at the same side or on the same end. So essentially, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of different, well, having a bunch of different appointments coming up, a lot of scans. So we're going to try to get things back on track with getting more episodes out to you guys. But we thought it would probably be good to let you know where the heck we've been. So with that, I just want to say, thank you so much for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Living Our Breast Lives, where we will share podcast updates, special dates, educational resources, and of course, health updates for those following our MBC journeys. Have questions, comments, or anything else you would like answered on our podcast? Send us a message on Instagram. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And as always, choose kindness. Someone may look fine on the outside, but you never know who's actually struggling on the inside. Until next time, don't forget to live your breast lives.